Would you like to loot Builder Cultist? What's a Builder Cultist? Chapter 7 Spoils. Would you like to loot Builder Cultist? The idea of rifling through the pockets of a corpse filled Jason with disgust. Would the system just loot the body, like it did with monsters? Corpse robbing was a nasty business, but Jason had no idea what kind of place he was in, or how to leave it without being eaten. He was going to need every advantage he could get his hands on. He thought about the snake back in the tunnel. It won't skin him, will it? He took a step back. All right, he said. Loot the body. Landomir Vane's keyring has been added to your inventory. Robes of the Astral Verdict have been added to your inventory. 4 gold spirit coins have been added to your inventory. 16 silver spirit coins have been added to your inventory. 138 bronze spirit coins have been added to your inventory. 437 iron spirit coins have been added to your inventory. 228 lesser spirit coins have been added to your inventory. Where were you carrying all that? That's about 800 coins. The robes the wizard was wearing had vanished, although he had been wearing a full set of clothes underneath. Jason pulled the robes back out of his inventory and held them up to examine. They were dark blue, but covered in the blood of their former owner. Item, robes of the Astral Verdict, bronze rank, rare. Robes designed for summoning. Armor, cloth. Effect, increases the damage dealt by dimension spells. Effect, summoned creatures have increased damage reduction. Effect, damage reduction against disruptive force damage. Jason wasn't ready to wear the clothes he took from a person he killed, especially when they were still wet with his blood. He returned the robes to his inventory and started searching about for something to cover the body. There was a fallen tapestry he dug out and laid over the corpse. Partly because he felt it was the decent thing to do. Mostly, though, he didn't want the body out in the open while he searched the room, always at the edge of his vision. He needed to find anything he could to aid his escape from this place and its cannibalistic inhabitants. He started by examining the magic circle in the middle of the room. It was large, around 3 meters across, the metal set directly into the floor. The lines were intricate and complex, like someone had started with a pentagram and gotten severely carried away. It was also damaged. Some of the metal had been pried up, other sections warped, as if by great heat, although there was no indication of burning anywhere. The circle wasn't useful to him, so he started going through the rest of the room. He started with the big desk the potions had been in. There were no more potions, but there were a few tins of healing unguent, which he took. Unlike the plain tins he got from monsters, these tins were branded with some kind of logo. Green Stone Alchemy Association, Jason read from the bottom of the tin. I guess alchemy is a thing too. Maybe I can pick up a crafting skill. The rest of the drawers contained piles of notes and diagrams that seemed related to the magic circle. Oddly, Jason could read the individual words despite never having seen the language before, but they didn't make any sense to him as a whole. From what he could gather, they were on some set of magical principles, as arcane to him as high-end theoretical physics. During his brief stint at university, he studied political science. Regular science had never appealed. He moved on, searching through toppled bookshelves and overturned tables. There was a variety of what looked like curios and display pieces, mostly tossed to the floor and broken, but nothing useful. He picked up a few of the books, flipping through the pages. There were a lot of them scattered around the room, their bookcases knocked over or even smashed. They seemed to be written in a variety of languages, but Jason had no problems reading any of them. Each new and unfamiliar text came as easy as if he'd been reading it his whole life. That's a little disconcerting. Although he could read the words, that wasn't the same as understanding it. Every book he picked up seemed to be about magic theory, making them as impenetrable as any advanced textbook from a field he knew nothing about. Moving a large overturned table from where it had been tossed against the wall, Jason discovered a display cabinet with a glass door. Despite the table that had crashed into it, the cabinet was wholly unaffected, the glass remaining clear and uncracked. Inside were four books, each on its own small easel stand. Compared to the other books Jason had found, these looked more impressive, with intricately embossed leather covers. Trying to open the cabinet, he found it was locked shut. After a few attempts to break the surprisingly sturdy glass, he remembered the keyring he had looted from the dead body. Pulling it out of his inventory, Jason discovered it was like a dungeon keeper's keyring from an old movie, a huge array of keys dangling from a large metal hoop. Item: Landomir Vane's keyring. Normal rank: common. The keys for various locks throughout the Vane Manor, as well as personal keys for Landomir Vane's possessions, a mixture of ordinary keys and magical keys. Tool. Effect: open specific locks. Jason looked over at the covered body laying on the floor. "Was that your name? Landomir Vane," he sighed. "Sorry I killed you, Landomir, but you tried to kill me first." He looked away from the covered corpse and focused on the task at hand. The keyhole on the cabinet door was quite small, so he tried the more delicate-looking keys until the lock clicked open. The cabinet wasn't very large, but there were only four books in the entire case, set out for display rather than efficiency. The embossed leather didn't have titles, instead bearing patterns like the magic circle on the floor. Jason took out one of the books at random. Item: Astral Magic 2, bronze rank, uncommon. A magical book that can impart the knowledge of intermediate-level astral magic. Consumable: skill book. Requirements: bronze rank, ability to use skill books, basic ritual magic theory, intermediate ritual magic theory, basic astral magic theory. Effect: imparts intermediate astral magic theory. You do not meet the requirements to use this item. Jason was familiar with skill books from video games that instantly gave out spells or special abilities. He couldn't try this one because he didn't meet the sizable list of requirements. "Does that mean I can be a wizard if I find the right book?" Jason started checking the remaining books. From the descriptions, it seemed the four books covered two different fields of magic, with one book at basic and intermediate level for each subject. Of the four books, Jason could only use one. Item: Ritual Magic 1, iron rank, common. A magical book that can impart the fundamentals of performing magic rituals. Consumable: skill book. Requirements: ability to use skill books. Effect: imparts basic ritual magic theory. You are able to use skill book, Ritual Magic 1. Use: yes, no. Reading over the description, he lingered on the requirement of being able to use skill books, which he apparently met. Remembering his character sheet, he pulled it up and started looking through the listings under racial abilities. Ability: Mysterious Stranger. Language: Adaptation. Essence: Awakening Stone and Skill Book Absorption. Immunity to Identification and Tracking Effects. Infinite language? Is that why I can read everything? The ability seemed to give him the power to use skill books, along with whatever essences and awakening stones were. He looked at the book in his hand. According to its description, it would give him knowledge. That meant it would alter his brain. But didn't his ability to read weird languages mean it was already affected? Was it already affecting his decision-making? For the time being, Jason stowed the books in his inventory. He could always look at them later. There didn't seem to be anything else he could make use of, so he decided to take stock. He found an undamaged chair and table, setting them up as far from the body as he could. There were a lot of tables for one room, although it was a large room. After sitting down, he started pulling out the items he had picked up but not looked at yet, placing them all on the table. He began with the items he looted from the snake. Mercifully, the night scale leather wasn't as drippy as the snake had been after it was skinned. Item: night scale leather, bronze rank, uncommon. The skin of an umbral mountain snake. Crafting material: leather. effect, crafting material for clothing, armor, and accessories. It was dark and matte, thick and cool to the touch. It was also surprisingly flexible. Like the snake, the leather was much longer than it was wide, coming out of his inventory rolled up like a traditional bolt of cloth and bound by a length of thick cord. Did I loot the string from the snake too? That's weird. The snakeskin was lifted as a crafting material, as was the dark quintessence, which turned out to be small black gems. Item, dark quintessence, iron rank, common. Manifested essence of darkness. Crafting material, essence. Effect, crafting material for items with darkness attributes. They had the look of uncut gemstones, but the shine of polished onyx. They even came with a pouch to hold them. This is weird. The rest of the items he received as quest rewards, mostly from quests he completed by accidentally braining the snake with a chunk of masonry. He thought the Night Fang would be crafting material like the others he had taken from monsters, but it turned out to be a scary-looking dagger. It came in a sheath made of the same night-scale leather, which was also used for the dagger's grip. It was curved in the shape of a fang, and when drawn from the sheath, turned out to be made of bone. It had a wickedly sharp edge, tapering to a point. Item, Night Fang, iron rank, epic. A dagger made from the fang of an umbral mountain snake. The magic of the blade allows it to retain the power of the snake's poison. Weapon, knife. Effect, inflicts umbral snake venom. Effect, attacks ignore bronze rank damage reduction and poison resistance. Umbral snake venom, damage over time, poison, stacking. Inflicts ongoing necrotic damage until poison is cleansed. Additional instances have a cumulative effect. The knife even came with a belt of the same leather, but there were no loops for it on Jason's drawstring pants. He put it back into his inventory, along with the dark quintessence gems and the roll of snakeskin. The remaining items were both quest rewards for exploring the well. The Awakening Stone of Stars was a smooth, rounded stone about the size of a fist. There were tiny speckles in the stone that seemed to move as he stared at it, although the effect was slight enough that it may have been his imagination. Item, Awakening Stone of the Stars, unranked, epic. An Awakening Stone that unlocks the power of the stars. Consumable, Awakening Stone. Requirements, Unwakened Essence Ability. Effect, awakens an essence ability. You have 0 unawakened essence abilities. You do not meet the requirements to use this item. Essence abilities, Jason read. Is that like magic powers? If I'm going to be dealing with cannibal wizards, I could use some magic powers. The last item was the dark essence. It was a cube about 15 centimeters to a side, with a glossy sheen like polished jet. It seemed to be made of the same material as the dark quintessence, and given the names, he assumed they were related objects. He picked it up. Item, dark essence, unranked, uncommon. Manifested essence of darkness. Consumable, essence. Requirements, less than 4 absorbed essences. Effect, imbues 1 awakened dark essence ability and 4 unawakened dark essence abilities. You have absorbed 0 of 4 essences. Once absorbed, an essence cannot be relinquished or replaced. You are able to absorb dark essence. Absorb, yes, no. Are you what I need to get those magic powers? Chapter 8. Dark magic. Jason frowned at the description of the black cube in his hands. Dark essence abilities. Sounds a bit sinister. How does that work exactly? Help. Essence abilities. Essence abilities are personal supernatural abilities. They come in a variety of forms, including passive abilities, special attacks, and spells. Compared to time-consuming and preparation-intensive ritualized magic, most essence abilities can be used spontaneously.
Wait, there's been a help function this whole time? Can you help me get out of here without getting eaten by cannibals? you are able to absorb dark essence. Absorb. Yes, no.
Oh, I see what's going on here. You want me to accept the dark powers you provided after following your plan got me here in the first place, making it seem like my only way out is to use the dark magic you conveniently provided. Classic seduction of evil routine. You could have at least been a little bit subtle. I think this is the point where you remind me how bad my situation is.
Zone, vein manor, subterranean ritual chamber.
Is that Snark? Do I have a snarky user interface?
Also, I know where I am.
He scowled. I have no idea where I am. He looked at the dark cube he was holding in his hands. Despite the slickly smooth surface, it had no sheen, not reflecting the lamplight at all. If anything, it almost seemed to be absorbing the light.
That's only completely ominous.
Jason picked up the lamp and panned it around the room. The magic circle, the covered body, the double doors leading into the inevitably perilous unknown. His whole reason for searching the room was to find any advantage before he went through those doors. His gaze drifted back to the cube.
Why not? He said. What's the point of going to Magic Land if you don't get a few magic powers?
He stood up, took a couple of deep breaths, then picked up the cube. You are able to absorb dark essence. Absorb? Yes, no?
What could possibly go wrong? Don't answer that, just absorb the essence.
The cube suddenly turned sizzling hot in his hand, and he dropped it to the floor.
What the?
Dark smoke started rising up off the cube, and Jason backed away.
It's possible I made a bad decision here.
The smoke coming off the cube was rising up in narrow streaks, like black streamers. They twisted in the air, heading in Jason's direction. He backed away further, but was quickly moving out of the light shining from the lamp he had left on the table. The smoke followed him into the shadows where he could no longer see it.
Sure, just get the dark magic powers. Good choice, idiot.
Jason felt the smoke reach him with the same scalding heat he had felt from the cube. He screamed as the black steam forced its way over his face, invading his mouth, nose, and eyes. At some point he passed out from the pain, his next sensation being waking up on the floor. Sitting up, he probed his face with his hands. The sensation of pain was completely gone, and nothing was sensitive to the touch. His eyes seemed fine, and he realized he could see the room as if it weren't dark at all. The colors were a little washed out, but he could clearly see into the parts of the room previously cast in shadow. You have absorbed dark essence. You have absorbed one of four essences. Progress to iron rank, 25%, one of four essences. Dark essence has bonded to your speed attribute, changing your speed from normal to iron zero. Master all dark essence abilities to increase your speed attribute. You have awakened the dark essence ability, Midnight Eyes. You have awakened one of five dark essence abilities. There was a mirror on one of the walls. It was huge, double the size of even full-length mirrors Jason had seen. There was a spiderweb crack coming up from the bottom, but mostly it was fine. He moved over to it, checking his face for burn marks. It was a little hard to tell under the encrusted blood and tunnel grime, but he appeared unmarked. His eyes weren't even bloodshot. The rest of him was just as dirty as his face, his skinny frame smeared with filth. The quest reward pants, originally white, were stained to the point that they looked like camouflage. It was the first time he'd gotten a look at himself since arriving. He'd been imagining himself looking like an action hero, heading into Act 3 with masculine dirt stains reflecting enemies bested and challenges overcome. Instead, he just looked grubby and ragged, the skin visible under the filth, pale and taut. His Japanese facial features, inherited from his father, were even sharper than usual, making his face look gaunt. His bald head and absent eyebrows made him look manic and unhinged. His skinny body wasn't flattered by all the muck on it either, looking less action movie and more refugee documentary. He sighed,
All right, let's take a look at my shiny new magic power.
Ability, Midnight Eyes, Dark. Special ability, Perception. Base cost, none. Cooldown, none. Current rank, Iron, 0. 0%. Effect, Iron. See through darkness.
At least it isn't complicated.
He looked around the room some more, the shadows no longer hiding anything from him. It wasn't like a low-light filter. The lamp didn't interfere with his sight at all. Its light was more like a beam that brought things into full color, compared to the muted look of the areas covered in shadow.
That's cool, I guess, he said. A little disappointing for a magic power, but I guess I'm not getting fireball from a dark essence.
He looked over at the table, and the round stone still where he left it. The magic stone of something or other would apparently give him another power, so he walked over and picked it up.
You have 4 unawakened essence abilities. You are able to absorb Awakening Stone of the Stars. Absorb. Yes, no.
He thought about the excruciating pain that came from absorbing the essence. On the other hand, there didn't seem to be any after effects, and he did get a magic power out of it. Before he used it, though, he made some preparations. One of the chairs he had seen scattered around the room was a deep, comfortable-looking armchair. It was extremely heavy, but he managed to drag it out from under a fallen bookshelf and flip it back upright. It was a huge wooden affair, with plush, stitched-in cushioning. He was sick of falling over in pain. Jason sat in the chair, the Awakening Stone in his hand.
Absorb.
Rather than turn hot and dissolve into smoke, the Awakening Stone grew cold before growing soft and melting in his hand like ice cream. It seeped into his hand, filling his arm with a bone-deep chill that once again left him yelling out in pain. It was not on the same scale as the essence. He kept control of his faculties, while frantically shaking the arm that felt like it had been plunged into ice water. Eventually, the bone-deep chill receded, and the pain passed, leaving him sprawled in the chair, heaving in breaths.
You have awakened the Dark Essence ability, Cloak of Night. You have awakened 2 of 5 Dark Essence abilities.
Jason could feel a change within himself. It was something new, yet weirdly familiar, like when he was reading a language he'd never seen before. The power was inside him, as if it had always been there, waiting to be awoken. He knew the power instinctively. It was poised and ready, eager to be used. He stood up and moved back to the mirror before using his new power. It responded immediately, as easy and natural as lifting his hand. Dark energy suddenly engulfed his body, hiding his visage in the mirror. It wasn't disturbing at all, but felt cool and refreshing. The energy coalesced into the form of a voluminous cloak, enshrouding his body and hiding his head within a deep, impenetrable hood. The cloak seemed more like an object of living darkness than fabric, dotted with tiny points of light. They shifted and twinkled, tiny stars in the night sky of the shadowy garb. Jason could feel the cloak, not like a piece of clothing, but like one of his limbs. He could feel its power. With a thought, the stars grew brighter, to the point that they outshone the lamp. Then they dimmed until he couldn't even see himself in the mirror, disappearing into the shadows.
Ability, Cloak of Night, Dark. Conjuration, Darkness, Light, Dimension. Base cost, moderate mana to conjure. Cooldown, none. Current rank, Iron, 0. 0%. Effect, Iron. Conjures a magical cloak that can alter the wearer. Offers limited physical protection. Can generate light or blend into shadows. Cloak can reduce the weight of the wearer for a low mana per second cost, allowing reduced falling speed and water walking. Cannot be given or taken away, although effects can be extended to others in very close proximity.
Water walking, Jason read. Now that's a magic power. He looked around the room. That I can't try out right now. He instinctively understood how to use the weight-reducing aspect of the ability and hopped lightly into the air. He went up much higher than he normally would and dropped back down slower.
It's like being on the moon.
He bounced around the room with a goofy grin on his face until he remembered the dead body.
Not the time to be having fun,
he scolded himself. He experimented further with the magical cloak. He could see through it as if it wasn't there, so even with his head covered, it didn't obstruct his vision. He could make any or all of it lose physical substance, so if he wanted to grab it, he could, or his hand could pass through, unobstructed. Nifty. He could make it vanish with a thought and pull it out again, which he tried several times. After the third attempt, he suddenly felt woozy and had to sit down. He went back to the armchair and fell into it. Your mana is low.
I'm out of mana already?
Also, I have mana? Is there a mana bar or something? Two horizontal bars appeared at the periphery of his vision. One was blue but mostly empty, while the other was orange and about two-thirds full. Next to them was a silhouette of a person that was mostly green, but the head area and the left arm were yellow.
All right, so the blue bar is mana, the little body is health, and the yellow bar is something?
Current stamina, 64%.
Okay, stamina. I think I'm getting a handle on this. I don't seem to have a lot of mana, though.
Help. Mana. Mana is a resource required for many essence abilities. Low mana will lead to mental exhaustion. Maximum mana is based on the spirit attribute. Bind an essence to the spirit attribute to increase maximum mana. Mana recovery is based on the recovery attribute. Bind an essence to the recovery attribute to increase mana recovery rate.
Jason let out a yawn. He had gone through a lot, and his time unconscious was hardly restful.
One last thing, he said, pulling one of the skill books out of his inventory. He walked over to the comfy chair and fell into it.
Item, Ritual Magic 1, Iron Rank, Common.
A magical book that can impart the fundamentals of performing magic rituals. Consumable, skill book.
Requirements, ability to use skill books.
Effect, imparts basic ritual magic theory. You are able to use skill book, Ritual Magic 1. Use, yes, no.
Yes.
The book floated out of his hand and into the air. The cover flung itself open, and the writing on it started removing itself from the page, changing from black to gold as the disembodied text floated into the air. The pages started turning, faster and faster, gold text pouring into the air. Turning pages flicked over in a rush as the golden text formed a corona around the floating book. Then the flutter of pages started slowing until the last page turned and the book fell to the ground, every page blank. The cloud of golden text swarmed over Jason like angry fireflies, disappearing into his body as it landed on his flesh with stinging bites. His mind was bombarded with information too quickly to process, leaving it lost and adrift. The pain and disorientation finally passed, leaving him in general control of his faculties, but dizzy and confused. He had no idea if seconds or hours had passed. He was weary to the bone, limbs as heavy as his eyelids.
Your stamina has been exhausted.
Unable to keep his head up, he slumped over in the chair, fast asleep. After what felt like no time at all, he was jolted awake by a loud hammering. His head was still hazy, and he shook it clear in time to see two men storm through the now broken double doors. The one in the lead was holding a hammer, the one behind, a shovel.
G'day, blokes. I don't suppose there's any chance you're not cannibals?
The pair scowled. The one with the shovel moved forward and hoisted it menacingly. Jason scrambled to pull the curved dagger from his inventory. He used all his knife-fighting expertise, which was none, and the shovel slammed into his face. Jason dropped the dagger, staggering back with his hands over his nose, blood spilling between his fingers. The shovel came down a second time, and everything went black.
Chapter 9. Escape. The circumstances in which Jason regained consciousness were unpleasant. He was cramped up in some kind of tight space, forced into a fetal position. His head was spinning. There seemed to be a little man inside it, trying to pickaxe his way out. His nose was congested with what felt like a fistful of bees, and to top it off, he had an urge to vomit. He lay curled up in a constricted space, throwing up on himself. As the vomiting subsided, he noticed the head section of his health silhouette was now a warning orange.
"I'm getting knocked out way too much."
He heard a male voice.
"He's woken up."
Jason's eyes swam into focus, although they felt puffy and didn't seem to open properly. He was in what looked like a dog cage, too small to stretch out his limbs. His new ability to see in the dark was intact, allowing him to make out that his cage was on a dirt floor, in some kind of cellar. The roof and walls were rough timber, and there was a pervasive smell of damp earth. There were four more cages in the cellar with him, each containing a person. One had a black guy, two had white girls. The last cage was bigger than the others, with thicker bars. Inside was an enormous, impossibly hairy man.
"A Wookiee?"
Jason asked deliriously.
"What's a Wookiee?"
the hairy man growled.
"Hey," the black guy called out to him. "Did they put a collar on you?"
"What?"
Jason's thoughts refused to walk in a straight line.
"Try and focus," the man said. "Looks like you were hit rather hard."
Jason ran his fingers over his face, feeling the dried blood thickly caked onto it. He yelled in pain as his fingers brushed against what turned out to be his very delicate nose.
"Did they put a collar on you?"
the man asked again. Confused, Jason reached up and patted his neck.
"No," he croaked.
"Why would they put a collar on me?"
"To suppress your essence abilities. You can still use them."
Jason nodded, which annoyed the man in his head, who went on a pickaxe frenzy.
"Ow. Yeah, I can use them, but I only have two." "Can they get you out of that cage?"
"One lets me see in the dark, and the other makes me sparkle, so probably not."
"Sparkle? I'd show you, but I think I might throw up again. Actually..."
Jason vomited, ending in a coughing fit, after which he passed out again. Jason swam at the edge of consciousness, hearing two people talk.
"He was in the underground ritual chamber,"
a woman said, in a controlled, elegant voice.
"Yes, m'lady,"
a gruff male voice replied.
"You left him in quite a state."
"Actually, m'lady, that's not much worse than how we found him."
"You didn't put a collar on him?"
she asked.
"Mr. Carruthers only procured the four, m'lady, for the ones we were warned about."
"It doesn't matter," said the woman. "Feel how weak his aura is. I doubt he has more than two or three abilities at most. Do you really think he's the one that killed Landamir?"
"That would be my guess, m'lady. He had more blood on him than wounds to produce it. He was also locked in the room with the young master's body."
"How could he even do it?" the woman asked. "He's so weak."
"It seems the young master had mostly done himself in, m'lady, summoning spell gone awry, from the looks of it."
"Is that why all those little monsters are running around?"
"It would seem so, m'lady."
Quest. No shirt, no shoes, no service. Objective complete. Discover the reason lesser monsters have infested the area, one of one. Simple shirt has been added to your inventory. Quest complete. 100 iron spirit coins have been added to your inventory. Jason stifled a yelp. He had been pretending to be unconscious when a bright blue screen appeared in front of him, and his whole body went tense. The pair continued talking, however, as if nothing had happened.
"So whoever this is got lucky and killed my son when he was at his most vulnerable."
"Not that lucky, m'lady. He met me."
"Just so, Dougal,"
she acknowledged.
"Do we know what Landamir was trying to summon?"
"I had a bit of a potter through his notes, m'lady. It was one of them entities from beyond the void."
Jason heard the woman sigh.
"Astral beings,"
she muttered unhappily.
"I told that boy it would be the death of him. We're a nice traditional blood cult family. This nonsense about ineffable ancients from outside reality was never going to work out. What did you do with Landamir's body?"
"Mulch, m'lady."
You mulched my son.
Well, he won't be mulched yet, m'lady. Composting isn't a quick process. I can fetch him out from the pile if you like, but m'lord won't be happy. He was quite specific as to the dispensing of the body.
I don't care what my stupid husband thinks. He married into the family. This is my manor, my family, and we do things the traditional way. Goodness knows what poor Landamir will taste like after having gone in the mulch pile.
I'll give him a good and proper wash before I bring him into the kitchen, my lady.
Thank you, Dougal. Excellent work, as always. Now, do we know where this man came from?
No idea, my lady. As you said, he's too weak to be an adventurer, and he wasn't exactly well equipped. He did have a good knife, though. Not sure if he took it from the young master, so I put it with the gear we took off these others.
You don't think he's with them?
I wouldn't think so, m'lady. He wasn't up to much.
Did he say anything?
I think he might have been about to, m'lady, but that was when he walked into me shovel.
Why did you take his shirt?
He didn't have one, m'lady. Didn't have the chance to ask why, on account of his walking into me shovel again. Do you want me to send him to the kitchen as well?
No. If he really did kill my son, I don't want him trotting off to death with his soul intact. Put him with the others for the blood feast.
Yes, m'lady, although that will be one too many.
I don't think the extra blood will be a problem.
I was thinking about the High Priest, m'lady. You know how he gets.
Yes, quite right, Dougal. Very well. Pick out one of the others you like and keep it for yourself.
Very generous, m'lady. I'll take the elf, if m'lady has no objections.
Are you sure, Dougal? Elves are quite stringy.
Derek was keen to try one, m'lady. I warned him, of course, but you know how young ones are.
Oh, yes, she said. They never believe you until they suffer the consequences for themselves. Just look where it got Landamir. And my daughter isn't much better. If it wasn't for the cult, I swear I never would have had children. Go fetch my idiot son's body before you take the elf. I don't want him picking up any more flavour than he already has.
Of course, m'lady.
The pair left, and Jason let out a long breath. He didn't know who those people were, but he heard enough to know that he wanted the hell out. He maneuvered about for leverage and tried to force the door with his legs, but it wouldn't budge no matter how much strength he put into it.
That's not going to work, the black guy told him.
Have you got a name? Jason asked. I'm Jason, and just thinking of you as the black guy is making me feel uncomfortable.
Rufus, the man responded.
G'day, Jason said. If you've got a better idea, I'm all ears.
Afraid not, Rufus said. Unless you've got some spirit coins tucked into those pants, you won't get it open that way.
Spirit coins? Jason asked. Sure, I've got some, but how will that help? I don't think these cages are coin-operated.
This guy's an idiot,
one of the women said.
Not helping, Rufus said through gritted teeth.
Jason, you don't happen to have a silver or gold rank coin, do you?
Hang on a sec, Jason said, checking his inventory. There were 16 silver coins and 4 gold ones, all looted from Landamir Vane's body. He took out one of the silver ones.
Item, silver spirit coin. Silver rank, common.
A distilled quantity of raw magic.
Crafting material. Currency.
Effect, used to fuel silver rank magic items or as a ritual component.
Effect, consumed to briefly increase all attributes to silver rank.
Oh, Jason said. He had previously examined the lesser spirit coins, which didn't have an option to increase attributes. He tried to remember if there was a strength attribute.
So I consume this to increase my attributes, Jason said. Consume as in eat?
Yes, Jason, it's very easy, Rufus said. You just put the coin in your mouth. Once you do, you'll have only a few moments to force open the cage.
So these attributes, Jason said. I assume one of them is strength?
The power attribute increases strength, Rufus said. The coin will increase them all, but only for a very short time.
Jason placed the coin uncertainly on his tongue, where it dissolved like a soluble tablet. His body was immediately flooded with a tingling sensation, and he felt an immense sense of power. His senses were sharpened. Eyes, already able to see through the dark, suddenly took in everything, as if seeing it for the first time. His ears picked up ambient sounds he had previously missed. He could taste the blood, sweat, and dirt on the air. It only lasted a fleeting moment before the world went back to normal, suddenly seeming dull and plain.
Jason? Rufus asked.
Yes, Rufus.
Did you use the coin?
I did, yes.
I don't want to pressure you, but did you, perchance, forget to open the cage?
Sorry, Jason said. I got distracted.
This is who you're relying on to save us?
The woman's voice spoke up again.
Still not helping, Anissa, Rufus told her.
Jason took out a second silver-ranked coin and put it in his mouth. This time, as the sensation of power came over him, he placed his feet against the cage door, easily bracing himself in the tight confines. His feet pushed out with a temporary surge of strength, the hinges on the cage door warping. He pushed harder, and the door fell away just as the strength drained out of him again. He crawled out of the cage and stood up. Waves of dizziness washed over him, and he gripped the cage to stay upright. His body felt weak, even more than it had when he woke up.
Are there side effects to those coins? Jason asked.
You used a coin with more power than your body could handle, Rufus said.
It will recover. A little more slowly, though, since you used two of them in quick succession.
Jason looked over at the other cages, and a screen popped up.
New quest. Escape. You have been trapped in the cellar of the Blood Cult, and you need to get away. Objective. Leave the grounds of Vayne Estate without being caught. 0 of 1. Reward. Essence. Optional objective. Rescue your fellow prisoners. 0 of 4. Reward. Awakening Stone.
Good job, Rufus said. Now you need to find something to get the rest of us out.
Giving us some silver coins would work if you have more. That won't be enough for Gary's cage, though. You shouldn't use more coins yourself until you've recovered.
Jason pulled out the big keyring.
I'm hoping this does the job, he said. Couldn't reach the lock from inside the cage.
Even better, Rufus said. I'd rather not have to fight our way out of here suffering the after-effects of using a coin.
Rufus pointed to the large, hairy man in the oversized cage.
Him first, Rufus said.
Jason went over to the big cage, getting a better look at its occupant. His body was the size and shape of a professional wrestler, and the parts not covered by his clothes were covered in fur. His head looked like a lion, complete with a glorious mane.
So you're Gary? Jason asked. He crouched down and started trying keys on the lock.
That's right,
the big man said. His voice had a deep, growling timbre.
I'm Jason, he said.
You look like Ron Perlman from that old Beauty and the Beast TV show.
I have no idea what that means, Gary said.
I'd say good to meet you, Jason said, as he continued trying keys. But the circumstances aren't terrific.
Thanks for not just running off, Gary said.
Are you kidding? I need you lot to get me out of wherever it is we are.
We're in a storage cellar.
I can see that much, Jason said. I meant this whole place. I have no idea where we are.
You don't know? Gary asked. Did they kidnap you?
Someone did, Jason said. I woke up in the hedge maze.
Gary, the lion man's voice, seemed to be growly as a default.
Look out! Rufus called, and Jason turned to look around. There was a doorway that seemed to lead into another section of the cellar, through which the man Dougal had returned, shovel in hand. Cheeky little sod, Dougal said.
Jason tried to think quick, but his head was far from in its best state. Shoving the keyring back into his inventory, he got up from his crouch, but was hit by a dizzy spell and stumbled. The shovel came down, and everything went black.
Chapter 10. The Evil Pit of Evil.
Jason was jerked back into consciousness as his body choked out more vomit. His throat seared as his empty stomach tried to cast out what wasn't there,
almost gagging him. His head was filled with stabbing pain, and when he opened his eyes, everything blurred like he was underwater. The only clear thing was the little silhouette showing his health, the head now a glaring red. His thoughts skittered about like a roach, dashing out of reach as he tried to pin them down. Slowly, he came to something approximating his senses. There was a light source somewhere up ahead, but the light it put out was blood red. Otherwise, the tunnel was dark, but his new power allowed him to see through it. He was once again in a cage, but bigger than the last. It was the same kind of heavy cage the Lion Man had been in, with thick, heavy bars. Apparently, they didn't want him kicking the door open again. His cage was being rolled down a wide stone tunnel, on some kind of moving platform. It was more like a train tunnel than a cave, with an arched roof and flat floors. There was even a rail, like for a mining cart, with his platform being pushed along it. Three more cages were being pushed the same way, one ahead and two behind. The people pushing wore bright red robes and ugly demon masks. More of them led the way up front, carrying lanterns with stained glass that produced the ominous red light. Jason wasn't thinking about what to do so much as desperately hoping the pain in his head would subside. He was concentrating on his breathing when a screen appeared. Quest: escape. Objective failed. Leave the grounds of Vayne Manor without being caught. Quest failed. New quest: the Blood Feast. You have been captured and are set to be sacrificed by a blood cult. You need to avoid becoming a sacrifice. Objective: avoid being sacrificed. 0 of 1. Reward: essence. Optional objective: save the other designated sacrifices. 0 of 3. Reward: awakening stone. The long tunnel ended in a pair of enormous stone doors, into which impressive but grotesque images had been carved, depicting some kind of cannibalistic orgy. 4 cultists stepped forward, 2 to a door, grabbing the handles and pulling back until the doors swung ponderously open. When they did, red light flooded the tunnel, accompanied by an incredible heat and a bitter smell. It washed through the doors and over the group like a wave, carrying with it a coppery taste that lay thick on the tongue.
"That's a lot of red flags," Jason said. A fist landed hard on the side of his cage.
"Quiet!"
A harsh voice barked. Beyond the doors was a vast circular chamber, like a great cylinder carved straight out of solid rock. Some 25 meters across and at least twice as high. It was enough to boggle Jason's mind, even through his punch-drunk haze. The walls were black, like some long-dormant magma chamber. But even starting from a natural cavern, it would have been a monumental labor to bring it to its current state. Flat stone slabs, carved out of the same black stone, had been inserted into the walls like pegs. They made a punishingly steep set of stairs that wound their way up to the higher parts of the chamber. Dominating the room was a red pool of roiling, bubbling liquid, taking up almost all the floor space. It was the source of the light, along with the heat and coppery stench of blood. The center of the pool churned, as if on the point of boiling. The sound of thick, sloshing liquid echoed up through the chamber. The red light shone from deep within the pool, washing the whole chamber in red, as if everything was coated in blood.
"That isn't good,"
Jason heard from one of the other caged people. It was Rufus, who had told him how to use the spirit coins. The Lion Man was there in his own big cage, along with one of the 2 women. The other was nowhere to be seen. One of the robed cultists bashed on the side of Rufus's cage.
"I said quiet." "Or what?"
the Lion Man grumbled.
"You'll sacrifice us in your creepy ritual pit."
The other prisoners were also dirty and ragged, but nothing like Jason. He had no shirt, no hair, and there was blood and old healing ointment crusted all over him. His face was coated in blood from his broken nose, along with puffy black eyes and flecks of vomit. The rail that had carried the cages on platforms through the tunnel ended at the door. The cultists lifted the cages off, 2 people to each small cage, and 4 to the large ones. They carried them up the steep stairs, audibly straining at the effort. The Lion Man's cage was the most troublesome, even with 4 people lugging it. The stairs wound up and around the circular wall, the group pausing after a quarter turn. They had reached a platform set into the wall like the stairs, but much larger. It extended well over the blood pit below.
"Leave the big one first," one of the cultists said. "No point carrying the heaviest one all the way to the top."
Jason recognized the voice of the woman he had heard in the cellar while pretending to be unconscious.
"Thank you, m'lady,"
one of the cultists said, gratefully. Jason recognized the voice as the shovel-carrying man she had addressed as Dougal. The cage holding the big man was left against the wall. Dougal and one of the other cultists walked over to the edge of the platform and took up a waiting position, facing out over the pool below. The rest continued on. The stairs continued to wind upwards beyond the platform, making another quarter turn around the room before reaching a second platform.
"Leave the other big cage," the woman said.
"Isn't he the one that killed the young master?" one of the cultists asked. "You don't want to save that one for last."
"I'm not going to make you haul that thing all the way up for my own satisfaction."
"Thank you, m'lady."
The four cultists roughly dropped Jason's cage up against the wall. As at the first platform, two cultists took up positions at the platform's edge, while the rest of the cultists with the remaining two cages resumed the climb. Jason watched as they made another quarter-turn ascent to the next platform, which hid them from sight. Jason took a look around. His vision was still blurry, like looking through a stranger's glasses, but it was slowly improving. The platform he was on looked like rough-hewn obsidian, shiny and dark. He had no idea how the massive stone platform had been shoved into the wall like a 6-ton peg. Examining the cage, he found that the bars were much thicker than the last one he had been in. Looking closer, Jason realized there even seemed to be faint traces of magical engravings on them. Oddly, Jason recognized them as reinforcing magic. The knowledge from the skill book was making itself known. It was an odd sensation, remembering something he had never learned. He was certain the silver spirit coin he used before wouldn't be enough to break out, and he couldn't reach the lock through the narrow bars to try his keyring. After pulling out one of the gold-ranked coins, he turned it over in his hand. Unlike the ones he got from looting monsters, this one was embossed with the profile of a somber man on one side and some kind of crest on the other, along with the engraved word Greenstone. His hope was that the gold coin would be powerful enough. He looked up at the two people standing at the edge of the platform. He couldn't tell if they were men or women in their hooded robes, but neither were paying attention to him. Instead, they were at the edge of the platform looking out. If he could escape the cage quickly enough, there was a chance to rush at least one of them right off the edge. He took a deep breath, focusing on the coin in his hand. He placed it on his tongue. He thought the silver coin had flooded him with strength, but that had been a meager trickle compared to the gold. It was like having a hurricane inside him, and he lashed out with his feet, hoping it was enough to burst open the cage door. Instead of opening, the door shot off its hinges like it was fired from a cannon, metal screeching as the whole front of the cage was warped. The door moved almost too fast to see, barely deflecting as it slammed into one of the cultists, sending them flipping off the edge of the platform. They didn't even scream, dead the moment the cage door crushed the top half of their body. "You have defeated Blood Cultist." Startled, Jason crawled from the ruined front of the cage into his feet. The other cultist reacted quickly, turning and rushing Jason. The coin's power was fading quickly, and Jason threw out a fist with the lingering strength of the coin behind it. To his horror, his fist buried itself in the cultist's chest cavity. The cultist let out a gurgling sound and died, dropping off Jason's fist as the strength from the coin left him. Jason looked in shock at his own bloody fist. "You have defeated Blood Cultist." It wasn't just his newfound strength that left him as the power of the coin faded. The strain of the coin's power left him feeling enervated, barely staying on his feet. His eyes wanted to close, his body urging him just to lay down and sleep. He was jolted back to wakefulness by a powerful roaring voice.
"They're coming for you!"
Jason's head snapped up and saw multiple cultists running back down the stairs. Looking around, the pair from below were coming up as well. Peering over the edge, he spotted the door below, on the far side of the blood-red pool. He had a terrible idea. Magic power? You'd better work. As he backed up, the starlight cloak formed about his body, shrouding him in light-speckled darkness. After a stealing breath, he ran to the edge, leaping out as he urged the cloak's power to reduce his weight. He sailed through the air, shadow cloak sweeping out behind him like a trail of stars. Floating over the bloody pool, he landed almost perfectly in front of the huge stone doors, still open.
That went startlingly well.
He looked up at the stairs, spotting the cultists bolting down them in pursuit. He ran through the doors and into the tunnel, then stopped.
Just run, he told himself. You can't save them. You're terrible at everything. Just run.
Instead of running, he ducked behind one of the heavy stone doors, which the cultist had not opened fully due to their enormous weight. He pressed himself between the wall and the door and waited. The cloak dimmed, going from bright stars to melding Jason into the shadows as he admonished himself silently.
Well done, idiot. Now you're going to be tossed into a pit of blood by cannibals and then probably eaten. Good job.
Cultists came rushing through the door, sprinting up the tunnel as fast as their bulky ceremonial robes would allow. None of them so much as glanced back at Jason's hiding spot. Jason stayed stock still and cowered behind the door as more cultists came through. Chapter 11. Dashing Heroics. Once the footsteps had died down, Jason cautiously stuck his head around the door, but didn't see any more cultists. Even returning to the chamber, he didn't see anyone. Whoever hadn't chased up the tunnel were most likely on the platforms above. He made his way up the stairs, as quietly as he could, with still no cultist in sight, as he reached the first platform. He dismissed the cloak as he approached the Lion Man's cage. It had the same heavy bars and large space as Jason's cage, but where Jason had been able to stretch out, the Lion Man barely fit.
Sorry, Jason said as he fished the key ring from his inventory. I've been hit on the head a lot today, so I don't remember your name.
Gary, the Lion Man said, a low rumbling growl to his voice. I didn't think you were coming back.
I tried to talk myself out of it, believe me.
Instincts of a hero, Gary said.
I'd probably put it down to compromised judgment, Jason said. I've been knocked out several times today.
Jason kept trying keys.
I'm not even sure one of these will work, he said. I was hoping to do this quietly, but I still have some more coins. Oh, there we go.
The lock clicked open, and Gary squeezed his enormous frame through the door. Inside the cage, he had looked like a professional wrestler, but now, towering over Jason, he looked like he'd eaten a professional wrestler.
Is there a key for my collar on that thing?
Gary asked. Around his neck was a thick iron choker. No idea, Jason said.
Give me a look at that.
Jason handed over the keyring. It had an unhelpful abundance of keys, and Gary started looking over them for what he needed. Despite his lion-like head, his hands were fairly human, albeit huge and hairy. While he went through them, Jason looked around. There didn't seem to be any cultists coming down the stairs or back in from the tunnel. What he did find was some kind of ceremonial bowl built into the top of the cage. Inside was a round crystal, very dark red in color. He picked it up. Item: Awakening Stone of the Feast, unranked, common. An awakening stone that unlocks the power of consumption. Consumable: Awakening Stone. Requirements: Unawakened Essence Ability. Effect: Awakens an Essence Ability. You have 3 Unawakened Essence Abilities. You are able to absorb Awakening Stone of the Feast. Absorb: Yes, no. He shoved the stone into his inventory.
None of these are for a suppression collar, Gary said. They got these collars especially for us, so whoever you took the keys from mustn't have been in on it.
Yeah, I think he was on the outs with the family a bit, Jason said. He seemed to have his own thing going on. What does that collar do exactly?
It suppresses all essence abilities, Gary said. Some race powers too, but not all of them.
Does it suppress you from being a huge guy who can kick the crap out of people?
A grin Jason could only describe as predatory crossed Gary's leonine face.
No, it doesn't.
Gary took the lead as they went up the stairs towards the next platform, which they reached unchallenged. Jason's cage was empty, the bars on the front bent outwards. The dead cultist was still laying on the platform, with a hole in his chest. While Gary knelt down to examine it, Jason checked the top of his cage. There was another ceremonial bowl, but it had been dislodged. Jason looked around a bit and found another awakening stone of the feast, where it had fallen to the platform when he kicked his way out of the cage. He slipped it into his inventory.
"What happened to this guy?"
Gary asked. Jason held up a still bloody fist. Gary looked from Jason's hand to the corpse to the blasted-out cage.
"I think at this point," Gary said, "they may be wishing they'd just let you go. How did you get mixed up in this anyway?"
"Not really the time," Jason said.
"Right. Good job, though."
"It wasn't a good job," Jason said. "I killed someone."
"What do you think they dragged us out in cages for?"
Gary asked.
"It wasn't to dance for their entertainment."
"Killing them in return doesn't make us any better than they are."
"Sure it does," Gary said. "Better at killing. Look out!"
Jason turned to see three cultists coming down the stairs. Gary stepped forwards to meet them, grabbing the first pair each by the throat. He lifted them up, one dangling from each hand as he walked them over to the edge and dropped them into the blood pool below. As Gary walked off, Jason was left face to face with the third cultist still on the stairs. Jason's eyes went wide with panic. He dropped to his knees, hands held out in supplication.
"Please don't kill me. I don't want to die."
The cultist's surprise registered even through the loose robes and mask. Jason used that moment to shove a fist right into the cultist's crotch. A strained groaning came from behind the mask as Jason lashed out a second and third time, leaving the cultist doubled over. Jason stood up, grabbed the cultist by the robes, and shoved him right off the side of the stairs. "You have defeated Blood Cultist."
"Did I just hear you begging?"
Gary asked, walking back. "It wasn't a lie," Jason said. "I really don't want to die." Gary laughed as he led the way to the third platform, which was now unattended. Whoever had been manning it had either pursued Jason out the door or been thrown to the pit below. Gary and Jason walked over to the cage, which contained Rufus. Jason now knew the right key to open the cages, which he used promptly. Rufus crawled out the door and stood up, giving Jason his first clear look at him. Rufus had dark skin, a bald head, and was stupidly handsome. Roughed up and grimy from his ordeal, he looked like an action hero heading into Act 3, with masculine dirt stains reflecting enemies bested and challenges overcome. "That's not fair," Jason said.
"What isn't?"
Rufus asked, his voice like dark chocolate.
"It doesn't matter," Jason muttered. "Let's just go."
"Too bad I don't have a weapon," Rufus said, and Jason produced the evil trowel. "It's not much," Jason said, "but it is suspiciously sharp."
"I'll take it," Rufus said gratefully, looking it over in his hand. "It is suspiciously sharp, isn't it?"
Gary and Rufus led the way up, Jason pausing to snatch a third awakening stone from the top of Rufus's cage. As they ascended the stairs, a lone cultist walked casually down to obstruct them. The cultist pulled her hood back and took off her mask, revealing long, dark hair and the face of a young woman. She pulled a short sword out from within the folds of her robes.
"I've got this one," Rufus said, stepping past Gary. He brandished the trowel in the woman's direction. "Alicia Vane, I presume," he said.
"I was disappointed that I wouldn't get to cross swords with the famous Rufus Rameau," she said with a sneer. "Looks like I'm lucky after all."
Rufus didn't respond, instead lunging forward. What followed was a blaze of movement so fast Jason had, at best, a vague grasp of what was taking place. They bobbed and weaved, both restricted by the width of the stairs. Between them was a blur of motion, sword against trowel. Despite the inferior weapon and the lower ground, Rufus was pushing the cultist back.
"That's enough, Alicia,"
a voice came down from above. Jason recognized it as the woman from the basement. With a look of reluctance, Alicia disengaged from her fight with Rufus and started backing up the stairs. Rufus lazily tossed the trowel into the air, where Gary smoothly snatched it and launched it out with a flick of his powerful arm. The practiced ease of the pair's teamwork took Alicia by surprise. She failed to react before the trowel lodged itself in her throat.
"You'll die in pain for that, you hairy brute!"
The woman's voice came fiercely down. As the woman yelled, Alicia dropped her sword, clutching at the trowel buried in her throat as she staggered and fell off the stairs. Rufus moved forward, snatching up the dropped sword as he went. He led the way up to the final platform. The last cage, and the woman inside it, were against the wall like all the others. The platform was slightly longer than the one below, with some kind of ritual altar on the end. There were two figures standing in front of it. Rufus and Gary stepped onto the platform first, while behind them Jason pulled a gold spirit coin from his inventory and discreetly palmed it. The final two cultists had both removed their masks and hoods. The woman seemed much younger than Jason expected, for someone with adult children. To Jason's eyes, she looked to be in her early 30s, no older than her son, Landemir. She was beautiful, with the same olive skin and dark hair as her daughter. The man next to her, by contrast, was plain. His ceremonial robes looked like those of a chartered accountant at a costume party. Despite his appearance, the man quickly demonstrated his power was not to be dismissed. He threw out his arms and Rufus and Gary were both thrown back, slamming into the wall. Glowing chains emerged from the stone to wrap around their limbs, binding them in place. Jason, now the last one left, looked nervously at the now helpless pair.
"You're still causing trouble," the woman said to Jason. "First my son, now my daughter. They may have been worthless, but weren't for the likes of you to kill."
"Not a lot of pictures up on your fridge, I'm guessing."
"Silence!" the man roared. "You think you can stop what I will do today? You think any of you can stop me?"
Whether due to the absurdity of the situation, the concussion, or just pure adrenaline, Jason couldn't take the man seriously. Even with the power he had just demonstrated, he just seemed like a petty little man who hated to be ignored. "Mate," Jason said, "I don't know if anyone told you, but you're very melodramatic." The man's face flashed with fury.
"You will bow before the magic of Daryl Carruthers, worshipping my name as I..."
Wait, hold on, Jason interrupted, holding up a hand. "Did you say your name was Daryl Carruthers?"
"You have heard of my greatness."
"Sorry, mate, no. It's just that Daryl Carruthers isn't exactly a high priest of evil kind of name."
"What?"
Jason gestured at the woman. "I mean, what's your name?"
"I am Lady Cressida Vane," she sneered.
"See, now there's a quality high priest name," Jason said.
"High Priestess Lady Cressida Vane.
Just listen to it. You can practically hear the tyranny."
"Stop babbling," Daryl scolded. "This doesn't..."
"Why didn't they put you in charge?" Jason asked Cressida, ignoring Daryl. He gave her a sympathetic look. "They didn't want a woman in charge, did they?" Daryl's face was starting to redden with anger.
"That has nothing to do with..."
"Oh, be quiet, Daryl," Cressida spat out. "You and I both know who should be running things, but they refuse to let a woman take a seat at the red table. If I was..."
"Stop being hysterical, Cressida," Daryl said.
"Hysterical? I should..."
Neither had noticed Jason edging closer from the moment he started provoking them, or when he slipped the gold coin in his mouth as they turned on one another. Strength flowed through him again, but this time joined by pinching, cramping pain. It was too soon since he used the last coin, and his body was paying the price. He fought through it and stepped between the bickering pair. They both looked at him in surprise as he shoved out a hand from either side, one slamming into each of them. The result was like firing them from a catapult. They both hurtled through the air horizontally, not even arcing down with gravity, before they smashed into the sides of the chamber. The sheer force crushed them into the hard stone, from which they tumbled down, out of sight. You have defeated Blood Cult Leader. You have defeated Blood Cult Leader. Chapter 12. Sanguine Horror.
"That was amazing,"
Gary said, coming up to slap Jason on the back. Jason staggered forwards to support himself on the altar at the end of the platform.
The way you made them disregard you as a threat, by appearing weak and harmless, Gary praised. Feeble and helpless, even touched in the head a little. It was masterful how impotent you came across. Even after you kept escaping from the cage, they had no respect for you as a threat whatsoever.
Please stop complimenting me, Jason said. The strength of the coin was gone, and the backlash of two in quick succession was enervating. His mana and stamina bars had drained to almost empty, and adrenaline was the only thing keeping him awake.
How did you get down off that wall? Jason asked.
The magic died with him, Rufus said, also approaching. Which was lucky, because it doesn't always work that way.
You'd have had a right problem getting us down, Gary said.
How about someone gets me out of this cage? A female voice asked, impatiently.
It wasn't the same voice that had been dismissing him back in the cellar. That person must have been the one whose place Jason took. Jason staggered over to the cage, swiping the stone on top into his inventory as he took the keys out. The woman inside the cage was pretty, with strawberry blonde hair and a button nose. She was clearly unhappy, although startlingly cute. As he opened up the cage and let her out, Jason wondered why these people were all so attractive.
Thanks for the rescue, she said to Jason, tamping down her annoyance, before blasting it full force at Rufus and Gary.
What the hell were you two doing? I had to get saved by a random homeless man.
He only seems like that, Gary said. It's all a cunning ruse.
Jason left the three of them talking while he wandered back to the altar at the edge of the platform. It was decorated with grotesque carvings that appeared to heavily feature teeth. On top of the altar was a thick book, left open halfway through. Glancing over the text, he could only understand fragments. Having used the ritual magic skill book he took from Landamir, the knowledge it imbued him with offered some insights, but this new book was still above his head. The content seemed to involve a more specific field of magic, operating at a higher level than the skill book allowed him to grasp.